Wednesday, everybody, and welcome to Minute 28 of the Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob.
I'm Tom.
And joining us today again is Justin from Stinker Madness.
Hello, all. See, it's so minute, like I've seen you guys recently.
Just yesterday. And the day before.
Right.
All right, well, episode 28 starts with Von Luger responding to Kuhn's comment from yesterday, and it goes all the way till Kuhn warns Bartlett about what will happen to him. This is a minute that's just pretty much a complete continuation of the previous minute scene, where we have Von Luger in Von Luger's office. You have the two Gestapo officers, Friesen and Kuhn, along with an SS officer, delivering their prisoner, Bartlett, over to the Luftwaffe, to Von Luger. So the first thing that happens is Von Luger turns to Posen and says, make a note of Herr Kuhn's suggestion. You know, as we discussed yesterday, the suggestion is to keep Bartlett under the strictest security confinement permanently, which, again, we're not really sure what he was referring to with that. But so he turns to Posen, who, as we discussed a few weeks ago, Posen, does all the lapdog beating of Von Luger. He's also pretty smirky with some of his comments or some of his expressions that he has along the way. And just make a note of it. And then at that point, Kern says that they have reason to believe Bartlett is the leader of numerous escape attempts, which is completely laughable that that's what he says. He's reason to believe. I guess you have to bring in better detectives to try and figure out, you know, what's really going on here.
They had him in the interrogation room and were like, so are you the leader of all the escapes? And he's like, no. Damn it. This guy's impossible to crack.
Yeah, well, they also mentioned that he was in their custody for 3 months. So that says a lot about Bartlett, you know, that he's able to not break under pressure of 3 months being in the Gestapo's care. I mean, based on what we all know, if you're in the Gestapo's care, you usually don't have an extended stay of 3 months. The fact that he lasted for 3 months, and again, as we discussed yesterday, we have no understanding as to why they decided to keep him alive. You know, there's so much easier ways to have dealt with someone who you think is a troublemaker like this. But that line in itself, that Von Luger basically, you know, he basically says to them, you know, you have 3 months to deal with this, and you only have reason to believe. I mean, that in itself shows the very difference between the conflict between the Luftwaffe and the Gestapo and the SS. You know, all these different areas of the German military hierarchy, each of them have their own agendas and their own positions on everything that's going on. As Tom mentioned, I think it was yesterday or maybe it was on Monday. No, I think it was yesterday, that, you know, based on the pictures that we see in Von Luger's office, so we know he was a flyer during World War One. You know, based also on the medals that he has and stuff like that. So he's not really into the whole Nazi Third Reich philosophy. And he basically believes, as most people usually believe, that their group is the best. You know, the Luftwaffe is better than the Gestapo, and it's also better than the SS, and I'm sure that everyone in the Gestapo thinks they're better than the others. You know, so it's interesting to have the three-pronged perspective of or conflict between these three different branches of the German military arm at the time. And the fact that they put, I think, if I remember correctly, this might be the only time in the entire movie that all three of these wings are together in the same room. And so someone who isn't aware of the difference between all of them, this minute actually shows that there's a big difference between them. Between, I'm not trying to absolve anyone of anything they did or anything like that, but you can see that there definitely is a difference in the stance that each of them have, even dealing with the prisoners themselves. The next line after that, you have the SS officer who, again, I didn't catch his name. He basically says, you know, one more time and he's not going to be so lucky.
Like, like a pretty not as aggressive of a threat as it could have been. It was still like, hey, you know, we took it easy on you last time, but next time we're going to take away your toys. How are you going to like it then? Where, you know, more like I'm expecting him to be like, yes, people cut off your balls and feed them to your mother.
So, no Wi-Fi for you.
Yeah, right, right. So it was still kind of like a don't be naughty threat rather than the how would you like to be buried in a desert threat.
Oh, see, I guess I took it a little differently. I mean, I assumed they had him hooked up to a car battery this last time, and they're basically saying, yeah, we did the car batteries, we did some other things, but next time you're going to look like John Rambo when we're done with you, or you'll wish you looked like John Rambo by the time we were done with you.
Again, he was in their custody for 3 months. I mean, come on. If they really, they must have tried everything to get this out of him. If they had a strong, if they reason to believe, you know, that he, you know, back to what we were discussing yesterday about the Starlink 17. So at that point, also they're trying to get a saboteur to confess, you know, and he just says, just let me go to sleep. I'll tell you anything you want. Just let me go to sleep, and that's after one night. So Bartlett is able to hold off for 3 months. That's pretty good. There's no question about that. And then after that, Von Luger throws in a very interesting statement, which again shows us the difference between the Luftwaffe and the Gestapo and the SS. He basically says all Air Force officers are ours. You know, we're the ones in charge. Which I think we discussed this a few weeks ago, the whole idea that it's interesting that in the German military system, they chose to have, or according to this movie, obviously I'm not enough familiar enough with the history, but they basically show that each branch of the service has their own prisons or has their own camps to hold their prisoners, which says a lot. Because I think you mentioned this, Tom, that in the U.S. Army, there's no such thing as that. I mean, you have the MPs, and they all deal with everything. You know, there's not a specific branch. You know, you don't have like a the Navy cops and it's all under the same umbrella. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, that's pretty much it. Yeah, it's not. They're not going to say, "Well, you were." You know, Army, so you get to go to an Army POW camp. You were Navy, you were Air Force. It's just, you're a POW, you're going to whichever camp has room. And then maybe it'll be try to keep some level of internal continuity. So if you've got a bunch of POWs that speak one language, you try to keep them together for the sake of, you don't have to have 20 different interpreters at 20 different camps.
Right. That's true. And then, you know, in that case, they wouldn't have put everyone together.
Right.
They would have split them up, you know, then you, okay. You know, they do eeny, meeny, miny, mo, and they put the Air Force prisoners together with their Army prisoners. And so maybe that's their problem here, that they put all the Air Force officers together.
Yeah, but this maybe British RAF is slightly different because you put a bunch of U.S. Air Force members together, they're not touching the dirt.
Right?
No, well, I got to tell you, in the book, they mention about all the American flyers that are there. Some of them got down and dirty. They really did. They were at one point, they split up the Americans from the rest of the British Kingdom prisoners, you know, because the prisoners came from everywhere. You had from New Zealand and Rhodesia and South Africa, and obviously we discussed about the Canadians and whatever. So the Americans were they chose to put them in a separate camp in order to try to, in some ways, possibly appease the Americans, even though the Americans were pretty pissed off that they moved them because, you know, they knew they were going to miss out on getting out on the you know, the Great Escape. Because they did it just a few months before the escape actually happened, so Hiltz wouldn't have been with them. Shouldn't have been with them, obviously. But then again, Hiltz never existed. So he really shouldn't have appeared there.
It would make for, if that was how things work, it would make for a sticky situation in the future. If we ever go to war and somebody captures one of our Space Force people, they'd be like, well, we don't have a Space Force. Crap, we have to make a Space Force so we can have Space Force POWs.
Or you just can't take Space Force POWs, so you have to send them back right away.
Back to space.
Nazi efficiency. Yeah. Basically, the last few seconds of the minute, they're continuing their conversation about the whole things about that they don't have such a professional understanding of the not so professional understanding. And then at that point, Kerr looks at Bartlett and says to him, once again, they're very professional they're very formal with the way that they speak. He calls him Squadron Leader Bartlett. If you ever escape again and are caught, and then he's cut off. So, mm-hmm. So you'll have to listen tomorrow to hear the rest of that conversation. Do you have anything else to say about this minute?
Just one observation, and it could be slightly, I don't know what the word is, xenophobic. And refresh my memory on what the character's name is, the guy that's sitting across from the commandant in the brown jacket.
Coon.
It's Coon. His accent was almost Austrian. There was a few times where he was speaking that I was like, there's a tinge of Arnold in there. And I'm wondering if that was on purpose or not, or if some of that was, Kevin Costner accenting of the 1960s or Nicolas Cage accenting of that point in time where the actor just couldn't get the German quite right, or if his character background was actually Austrian. It was just another little, like, observation that I had in this scene that I didn't notice anywhere else.
So,
okay, well, I mean, okay, go ahead.
I was going to say the actor Hans Reiser, we're going to go with that. I mean, he was German. I mean, he was born in Munich and looked like he lived in Munich most of his life. And pretty much all his filmography is German movies and TV. So it could just be that's his whatever, that's the voice he speaks English in without trying to do a specific cultural accent.
Yeah, the accent change of speaking somebody else's language that isn't your native, that's probably the kicker that puts that over in that area. And my stupid American ears just hear all Europeans as sounding like Tommy Wiseau, so,
But maybe you're right. Maybe Schwarzenegger looked at this, saw this movie and loved it as a kid and decided to change his accent to sound like Herr Kuhn along the way. You never know.
You never know. Question for the ages.
Apparently, because unfortunately, the actor Hans Reiser passed away almost 30 years ago, so we can't ask him. If we ever managed to get someone on the show who was still living, maybe they would know. We'll have to try and remember to ask that question if that ever comes to that. You never know. You never know. We might have some surprises along the way.
Well, I'll just let you guys know, I was not in this movie, so I can't answer.
Oh, crap.
Well, why did we invite you then? You lied to us on your resume.
I've been asking that question my whole life.
Your whole life or your whole professional life?
Who do these people invite me anywhere?
Apparently it's because of your charming personality.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Anyone have anything else to say about this minute? Okay, I guess that's a no. So, Justin, why don't you once again... give everyone your plugs. Tell everyone how they can get in touch with you.
You can find me at stinkermadness.com on the Stinker Madness podcast, the movie for bad movie lovers. And also on all the socials at /Stinker Madness. And email is the best way to get a hold of me. talk@stinkermadness.com.
All right. And if anybody wants to get in touch with us, you can obviously rate, review, and subscribe to us. Our email address is thegreatminute@gmail.com. Our Twitter address is GreatEscapeMXM. Our website is thegreatescapeminute.com. And you can find us on Facebook under the Facebook group, The Cooler. So, Justin, hope you'll be willing to come back again tomorrow for another day.
You bet.
All right. Great. So, tally-ho.
Tally-ho.
Tally-ho.